Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you save and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. According to the latest report by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the average house price in Australia last year was $933,800. So it's about $1 million. This is a significant increase from what it was a year ago. In fact, in the last 12 months alone, the average price of houses in Australia rose by $52,000. So what does that mean in terms of your mortgage repayments? You're really looking at around $2,900 per month, depending on which state you live in. So that's in the Northern Territory. But if you live in New South Wales or in Victoria, you're looking at something as steep as $7,000 per month just on a typical home. So that's not even a mansion yet. So most wages fall short of this number, which is why so many have kind of lost hope or a little bit discouraged about buying their own home. But what if I tell you that there is one way to bridge the savings gap without knocking on the bank of mom and dad? And that is through splitting your property purchase with a friend. New research from ING Bank released this month found that 46% of all Aussies believe that in the next decade, home buying with friends will become common practice if house prices continue to rise. The question is, you're already willing to split the bill with your friends at a restaurant, but can you really make that big leap of buying a property with them? How? And what are the steps you need to follow? You'll find the answers by the end of this episode as we go through the possibility of being friends with property. I'm joined by Matt Bowen, Head of Consumer and Market Insights at ING, which did the survey. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Michelle.
Now, I've just given this long intro about how can you get around the housing crisis that we have at the moment, housing affordability. So tell me a little bit more about this survey. What did you do exactly? What were the questions you asked?
Yeah, so we went out and surveyed Australians and just asked generally how they're feeling about property and property ownership, given, you know, what you've mentioned, the prices in Australia continue to rise. I think the latest data shows that capital cities are up 7% just in the past 12 months. So
crazy.
Phenomenal growth rates. And so we wanted to check in with Aussies about how they're feeling and, you know, what options they have to purchase property. And I think the exciting thing that we heard back was that, yeah, almost 50% of Australians are willing to purchase a property with a friend or a property pal.
And I think we haven't really considered it in the past when, you know, that you can afford, let's say, a $500,000 mortgage, you kind of save up for 2 to 3 years. But the idea of saving for 7 years for a home deposit just feels like a little bit of a stretch. So you can do a property investment or your own home with a friend. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the concept of a property pal, I guess, spans across both investment or properties to live in. So you can choose which pathway you want to go down there. I think it's really common for people to buy properties with a spouse or a loved one, but this idea of actually starting a property portfolio for an investment purpose with a friend, or
yes,
potentially choosing a property, you know, to go halves in with a friend to live in, is an exciting new concept that we haven't necessarily seen too much about yet.
I think it's not often talked about, but I have a friend who 25 years ago bought an old rickety house in Surry Hills, which is an inner city suburb in Sydney, with six other people. And they kind of just squeezed in this one flat. But as you can imagine, properties around that area has just gone up. So it is crazy. Now, what are the interesting things, though, about your survey? If you look at the different age groups, when are you most likely to kind of invest with a friend?
Look, I think this is an unsurprising answer, but the younger generations are the ones that are really much more open to this concept of purchasing with a friend or having a property pal. And I think, you know, I'm generalizing here, but if you look at older generations, the boomers, for example, they've been able to get into the property market when property was probably slightly more affordable. They've got a lifetime of earnings behind them. They've potentially got big savings portfolios that are earning lots in this interest rate environment. And you contrast that with the younger generations who, you know, early stage careers, potentially not at their maximum earning capacity yet, and are really getting hit hard by cost of living, whether it's food, rent, electricity, whatever that may be. So rather than give up on the great Australian dream, this generation's actually said, you know what, I still want to purchase a house. I just want to do it a little bit differently to what you've done. And they're looking at options with friends.
Why not? Why not? So walk me through that. How do you do that exactly? Do you kind of sit with your friend and you kind of compare bank statements, which is quite a scary thought? There might be a bit of judgment of that. How do you work out that exactly?
Yeah, look, it's going to be an interesting conversation, but a very important conversation. You know, this is a serious financial commitment that you're making with a friend. So I would say first and foremost, you need to be prepared to be quite open and transparent with your friend around what your ambitions and objectives are. So what happens if, Michelle, you want to move overseas? What happens if you want to move out of the home or you want to move into it? Or if one of you gets married and wants to buy a property elsewhere? These are the types of conversations that you need to think about for the long term, given that a mortgage is often a 25 to 30 year commitment. So first and foremost, be prepared for that chat, because circumstances will change. And I think the second thing would be to sit down with an expert, a mortgage broker, a banker, a legal expert, understand the different kind of product options, but also the legal options available to you if you're looking to purchase with somebody else.
Now, hang on a second. Do they have to see my bank statement though, or is it just with a bank that you're applying the home loan with?
It's just with the bank, generally speaking. So no one's going to know how much you spend on Netflix on a monthly basis, but you typically would submit independent financial records to the bank. They will then do the assessment and understand your borrowing power or your financial capability or capacity independently. You don't need to kind of sit down and share the ins and outs of your bank statement.
And it's a different experience for those who have already purchased their own home and they're looking to expand their property portfolio. And this is now their second property purchase. But with the documents that you need, do you have to provide any special documents or does it feel like you're just walking through a typical home loan?
Yeah, if it's your first home, it would be your typical documents. So you'd need identity and identity verification documents. You would need pay slips and bank statements to kind of prove your ability to service the mortgage. They would be your typical things that we would look at from an assessment perspective. If it's a investment property, then you will be potentially looking at unlocking equity in existing property portfolios. So then there'd be additional layers of documentation that would include a valuation on the existing properties that you have within the portfolio.
But am I right in saying that it's really no different to buying a property with your spouse or buying a property with your relative or family member? It's just the fact that you're not blood related.
Exactly. Yeah. There's two options there. One is the joint tenancy and one is called tenants in common. Now, joint tenants are typically when you are in a relationship with somebody, if one of you unfortunately passes away, then the property automatically transfers over to the other party on that mortgage. The additional option was the tenants in common option. So these are all legal jargon that you'd want to check with your lawyers. But the tenants in common allows you to have a different variation. It might be a 50-50 split with your friend, a 90-10, 75-25, whatever it is. You can have a much more custom agreement that's in place and also agree what happens if one of you wants to sell or move out or wants to move on.
But that would be part of your conversation with an expert. No different to, say, talking to your conveyancer, talking to your solicitor and all of that jazz.
Absolutely.
Does it cost a lot to kind of have that extra layer of, you know, legal documentation that you need to prepare? Or by and large, I mean, this really says now you can buy a property instead of like, I'm not going to go through all the extra documentation that I have to supply.
Well, I mean, you know, buying a house is not a cheap thing to do in most of the capital cities around Australia. So if you consider cost in terms of the long-term financial commitment you're making, I don't think it's too much of a cost to make sure you have all your documents in order and you've got really good advice up front. Like I said, it's a 25 to 30 year commitment on a mortgage. So you want to make sure that you're in it for the long term and you know exactly what might happen or be prepared for what might happen.
Well, I guess we can't really tell, right? It's in terms of people who are concerned about their jobs. They might be unemployed 6 months after purchasing the property. So what would be the exit strategy in place? Is there an exit plan? And who do you talk to about that?
Yeah, this would all be part of those conversations that you have with the experts. So if someone's circumstances do change, if they're unable to repay the debt, you want to make sure that you've planned for that. So you don't want to be liable for your property pal's contribution if they're no longer able to commit. So having those conversations with a lawyer or somebody that can actually agree what that exit strategy would look like or what happens in the instance that these circumstances change is super important.
And just going back to the two terms that you mentioned before. So very quickly, there's what's called the joint tenancy. And you have each person owns an undivided interest in the whole property. So that means if one co-owner passes away, the share automatically passes to the surviving co-owner. And I think this is what we're used to, because that's how partnerships work, spouses, husbands and wives. But most likely, if it's with a property pal, this is what's called a tenants in common, where each person owns a specific share or percentage of the property. And if you do, unfortunately, you pass on, then everything is based on either the contract or the will that you've put in place.
Yeah, spot on.
So I think we got to be honest. A lot of people don't want to write their will. So this is probably the one big thing that you're in your 20s or 30s and you're off writing a will. But maybe it's just for this particular asset, for example, if it's the only asset that you have.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these documents might be daunting at the outset, but they're super important if you want to set this up for success from the outset. So yeah, lean into those awkward conversations, be it with your friend or be it with your lawyer, and think long term about this decision.
Now, we talked about affordability earlier, and a lot of people think, well, how do we work out the deposit for this? Do you have to save up kind of half-half if you borrow with a friend, or can it be with a group of friends? How do you work that out?
So all of those options are possibilities. I think the beauty of this tenants in common arrangement is that you can divide it however you like. So Michelle, if you want to contribute 60% of the deposit, that's great. We can come to an agreement there. If you want to split it between six parties, again, that's, you know, slightly more complicated, but it is a possibility within this arrangement. You know, typically when you're talking mortgage deposits or home loan deposits, it's around 20% is what is kind of the benchmark standard. Now, most banks will allow you to also borrow more than that, so you can have smaller deposits, but you will likely incur something called mortgage insurance. So it's an additional cost just to protect in the instance that that mortgage isn't repaid.
Well, I don't even know what the big deal is. It feels like this is something that you can do with friends, but I guess you just have to kind of cross the line where you get to know each other's finances. And this thing about a credit score, for example, I assume that both of you need to have solid credit scores. And if one doesn't have a good credit score, you just have to work towards that for like 6-8 months before you borrow.
Yeah, spot on. I mean, look, money is taboo, I think, still. We don't talk about it enough. So you're absolutely right. Sit down, be transparent, talk about your finances. And, you know, the reality is if you're looking to purchase a property with a friend or a property pal, you know, both of you have similar objectives. So you're going to want to share this information. You're going to want to know that your best mate, he's in a good financial position, that he doesn't have a bad credit score. If he does, you're going to want him to tell you about that so that you can work together to still achieve this home ownership dream.
Fantastic. Well, I think we'll leave it there. I still have a lot of questions because I do want to see if I can have property with friends. But let's end it with a quote from Rachel from that phenomenal, iconic TV show, Friends, where she said, "Well, maybe I don't need your money." Wait, wait, I said maybe. With a housing crisis, I think it's fitting to really consider what are the other ways you can buy a property. Thank you once again, Matt, for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Michelle.
Before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics you'd love for us to cover. Maybe you have some questions for Matt through our email podcast@moneymag.com.au. And finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all our financial news and stories. That's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.